Welcome to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. My name is Phil Strum, so glad you've joined me today. The person who's my guest today has a tremendous story to tell. I've known Vic Delicious for over 14 years. His is a journey of a long road to success in pro wrestling, some personal sacrifice, one of the absolute worst injuries I've ever seen in person in my life, addiction, and also recovery. What do they say? The get back is better than the setback. Well, Vic has transformed nearly every aspect of his life and body, and he's back in the ring and looking better than ever. You can catch him upcoming on NWA and their programming, as well as the ISPW promotion in New Jersey. I have interviewed Vic so many times in my career, and I feel like we went deeper and more personal on his story in this one than we ever have before. Vic Delicious is more than just the most unique name in pro wrestling. He's a real guy named Rob Begley with a story that a lot of people can learn from. So here we go with Vic Delicious. I am so happy to welcome to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversation someone I've known for a very long time, Vic Delicious. Vic, welcome to Under the Ring.
Hey, what's going on, Phil? Thank you so much for having me. It is a pleasure to be here, finally.
And as I noted before, we first met April the 19th, 2008, which it was now then, but it's also now. So
yes, that was then. This is now.
Correct. So since we're with a member of the now, let's start with what you're doing now in pro wrestling. Tell me about your recent work as part of the tag team, the now, with the NWA and also with ISPW in New Jersey.
Yeah, the last probably 10 months has been really intense for us as a tag team, a little bit of a resurgence, refocusing and a rededication to being the best tag team around. So we started back with ISPW in September of last year, just trying to feeling out the waters and seeing how we did. Hale and I back teaming together on the regular, and I was coming back from an injury and a lot of different things had gone on. So we had a chance at ISPW to just get comfortable in the ring again. And then we won the tag team championship, and we were on, twice a month wrestling in New Jersey. And we ended up submitting our information and stuff to the NWA for consideration to the Crockett Cup. And we ended up being selected in the first round to wrestle the Briscoe brothers. And it was, a fantastic opportunity, a great match for us. And then we continued wrestling with ISPW. We've had a really successful, opportunity to wrestle in the Demolition Cup, and we won the Demolition Cup presented to us by Axe and Smash themselves, Demolition. And we just had an opportunity to compete again with the NWA at their television tapings. So exciting stuff for the last 10 months for Hale and I.
Wrestling is a way of creating funny circumstances, like you getting unique career breaks now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's 21 years in pro wrestling, and I can't say that I haven't had other opportunities before, but this is the first time where an opportunity has come our way where we really feel we have all of the things lined up to really make the most of the opportunity now.
And a wise man once told me, no opportunity wasted.
Who was that wise man?
It might have been Vic Delicious.
It might have been.
N-O-W now. Anyway, so, we both know him well, but what makes your tag team with Hal Collins work the way that it does? How has it evolved over time, and what do you each bring to the table?
We are the epitome of complementing each other, where one has a strength, the other may have a particular weakness, and vice versa. We have known each other since we were in middle school and became kind of like buddies but adversaries in high school, if that's the best way to put it. We would compete against each other and do kind of like carny pro wrestling things as we were wandering through the halls of Arlington High School. And it culminated with when we graduated in the Mid-Hudson Civic Center in 2000, which I'm dating myself now. We both went our separate directions, and I went to go play football for Utica College, start a football team there. And he went to Johnny Rod's school down in Brooklyn and started his journey into pro wrestling. And it took me about a year before I jumped in a different school. But we've been doing this for a very long time, and we've stayed in contact in the early parts of our career. and we inadvertently were helping each other in ways that when you look back on it now, you can kind of understand how that was really working. But we got together as a team in 2006 after I had had a run with OVW and WWE developmental. And we decided to kind of just take this idea that Hale had had where he was quoting the movie Wayne's World. And when Wayne gets out of the car and runs up to the window to see the guitar, Gar says, "Give it up, Wayne. You'll never afford it. Live in the now." That idea right there kind of just clicked. And when he had said it to me, I immediately got it. And I felt it was something that we could really do together. And we started to get some advice about trademarking and copywriting. And this may be something that could be timeless and something that you could really use as a stepping stone for your career is creating a brand like this. So we've been through it all together. Hale and I have been business partners, best friends, all of the ups and downs of life. We've gone through it together, and he's been right there by my side and as close as you can get without being brothers. And in some cases closer than brothers from the things that we've experienced and gone through together. And we have at this point in our career experienced all of the struggle. And we both said to ourselves that we weren't going to quit until we got to the other side of that struggle, which is where you get to relish in the success. And success for us has changed over the years as to what we would necessarily view as being successful. And right now, the thing that would make us both feel successful is to validate our professional wrestling careers in a way that can't ever be taken away. And that's by marking our names in the history books as World Tag Team Champions.
One of your entrance themes, Cinderella Man by Eminem, has the line, "You know, technically, I'm not even supposed to be here right now," at the beginning of it. And you suffered one of the worst, probably the worst injuries I've ever seen in person when you fractured your tibia, fractured your fibula, broke your ankle, fractured your foot all in one shot. You also re-broke your leg, nearly lost it to infection, and then had other, your other struggles after that. How did that all shape you and move you to where you are right now?
It defines who you are as a person in different ways when you allow it to, when you view things that are struggles as opportunities to improve yourself. And I went through a lot of different circumstances where I could have played the victim and certainly looked at the negative side of the situation that I had created and the choices that I had made. And I'm really proud of myself for how I got through on the other side of it and for the person that I've been able to become and prove who I really am. And an injury like that has a way of kind of sucking the air out of everything that you feel that you are going to do or that how your career and life were going to go. I didn't ever imagine shattering my leg into 15 pieces and to re-break it again and then have it get infected and almost lose my leg. They told me on a daily basis that I was going to like lose my leg, that they were probably going to have to schedule the surgery to cut my leg off from the knee down. I had had a steel rod put in from the top of my knee straight down to my ankle. Because the first surgery that they did for me was some steel plates in there, and I got cleared to walk, and we suffered a personal tragedy and had to handle some things personally. And during that situation is when my leg broke again, and I had to have another surgery and have a steel rod put in through the top of my knee down to my ankle, and that steel rod then became infected through the dressing changes and things like that. And it was tough because I was looking down the barrel of not having my right leg anymore, let alone having the professional wrestling career and the goals and dreams that I had set for myself with not only professionally, but also personally, kind of being just ripped away from me in the blink of an eye. And to be able to go through all of those things and all of the personal tragedies, but personal obstacles that I went through in the last 2.5 years to come out of it on the other side of it in the absolute best shape of my life, in the best mental place that I could be in, created accountability with myself and with the people around me, and gained sobriety through all of those things and a real value for the gifts and opportunities that I've really been given in pro wrestling, because it was all yanked away from me and I was told I would never, ever get a chance to do it again. So every time that I'm in there, I'm making the most of that opportunity because I know what it feels like to be told you're never going to get it again. You're never going to do that again. And, you know, I worked real hard to make sure that that wasn't going to be the reality and experience that I had.
You mentioned your sobriety. You're open about that, the battle that you have. Addiction's a topic that's come up a lot in pro wrestling lately. For other wrestlers or even other people who are dealing with addiction issues, what kind of advice do you have for them based on your own experiences?
It's a tough one because everyone's journey is deeply personal, and you have to get to a place in your own path where you are ready to make the necessary changes to live the best life possible and to be the best version of you that you want to be. For me, that was eliminating alcohol out of my life. And I had made a lot of choices under the influence of alcohol that damaged a lot of personal relationships that I had and really created a lot of mistrust with people professionally, because I wasn't myself. And I did my sobriety a little bit differently than how a lot of other people do it. I had a moment where I just realized that I didn't want to feel this way and be that way anymore. And I realized I had had a dependency and I had been hiding it for a very long time. And it was like I had like these other versions of myself where alcohol really was kind of like running the ship on that other version of me. So for me, I had a book called The 30-Day Sobriety Solution, where you read like kind of like a thing every day and you do some homework with it. And for me, I didn't want to ever have another day one. So for me, my motivation really was that I was building credibility and accountability with myself by every day that I was alcohol free. And I didn't ever want to say to myself that I had to go back and start over at a day one. So I was doing all of the work where I was asking myself the questions I needed to ask. I was feeling the feelings that I needed to feel, bringing them up, talking about them, doing things like meditation, doing things like grounding. I'm a big believer in a lot of natural aspects that the earth provides for us, and walking bare feet on planet earth is one of those things that just happened to work for me and helped me out. It was a calming energy for me, and I focused a lot in on getting myself in great shape. I wanted to pay attention to this body that I had been numbing a lot of the feelings and experiences that I was having through dependency on a chemical. And it was really hard. I went through a divorce in the process. I have 3 little kids and they're counting on their dad to be the best version of himself that he could be and to be there alive for them as they grow up. And I had made certain choices that put me in a position where I was not there for them when I needed to be. And the best thing about my life I had always considered was becoming a dad. And I'm most proud of those kids. And when I had felt that I had let my kids down, it was a real tough moment for me to some self-actualization and having to look into the mirror and realize the person that I was and who I had become and who I wanted to be. And every day I took the proper steps to ask myself at the end of the day, did I do all the things today that get me a little bit closer to that version of me that I want to be? And as corny as it sounds, that was a lot of living in the now and living in every single moment for what it was and experiencing it, feeling it, and getting on to the next one. And to think that the pro wrestling gimmick that we had created, like these t-shirts, you know, like this thing right here that we were throwing around and getting everybody to cheer, ended up being the thing that pulled me out of the lowest place that I had ever been in personally and professionally, is a bit poetic.
Well, congratulations on all that you were able to overcome and accomplish. And obviously, I think you know that you have a lot of people in your corner as you continue to march on.
Thank you, Phil. I appreciate that very, very much. You've been somebody that has been there for this ride for a very long time, and you know me on several different levels, and that means a lot. Thank you.
All right. And the drastic change in your look, you mentioned that too. Do you feel as good as you look and also in the ring?
Yeah, I do, man. It's crazy because when I've dropped over 115 pounds since the last time I was actively like performing as a wrestler, and that was like through the pandemic and just wanting to change my body. And my goal was abs. So I wanted abs. It was something that I had, it was like this far off goal from an over 300 pound guy to ever have abs. So I really just wanted to focus in on my body and see how what I could do to change it. And to be in the ring 115 pounds lighter, I feel incredible because I'm floating around the ring in a different way. And my body reacts to things in ways that I always wanted to like make things look, but wasn't able to because I was a heavier dude. And I always prided myself on being the big guy that had agility and the big guy that could move. And the reality was, when I looked back at my pro wrestling career, it was like I was the big guy that could move and the big guy with the agility, but it didn't ever get me noticed and it didn't get me to where I needed to be. So the fighting back of, well, it shouldn't be about my body. It shouldn't be about my body. Well, it is. And ultimately, that's how this business, professional wrestling, is that you can't not look like you're an athlete. And there were times in my career where I didn't look like I was an athlete. And I wanted that to be the big change when I came back this time, is I wanted to look like I took this seriously and that this is what I wanted to do and leave a legacy that follows through on how I feel I can contribute to the world of pro wrestling. Being in the ring and being able to tell some of the stories that we're able to tell now, with me clear-headed, clear-minded, and with full control of my body, you know, I feel better than I felt even 10 years ago. And it's incredible. It's like I literally jumped into a time machine, into a better version of myself. And I look at myself in the mirror and I can't believe that this is me, because there's just been times where like I used to run away from mirrors. Like when I would see a mirror, I was like, nah, I'm not looking. Or like when I would change my clothes, and I was just like all the things that everybody feels when you're self-conscious and don't have a great feeling about yourself. I did all of those things and I've experienced all of it. And one ultimate goal in this whole pro wrestling thing is that my story that I have and the things that I've experienced hopefully can help people to at least know that they can do it too, and you can change your body. And if they tell you that you can't ever run again, if a doctor tells you you can't walk again, like that's not for somebody else to decide. That's for you to decide. And for changing my body, I know what it feels like to be trapped inside of a body that you feel you have no control over and that you can't change and that you're constantly spinning your wheels. And it took me 38 years to really dial in on my own chemistry of my body to figure out how to crack the code. And it was through fasting and through trusting in my choices for foods and not a whole lot of things that came packaged in a box. So I don't know if that's the long to short answer to that question, but I feel fantastic. Thanks for asking.
That's great. And now you also have to be proactive about sending, you know, current accurate photos of yourself to promoters when shows are coming up too, since you may look a lot different from the last time that they saw you.
It's even in the last few months, like we took some promo shots in I think it was like September, October of last year. And I've lost like 35 pounds since then, and added a little bit more muscle and just some different things where I don't even necessarily look the same as those pictures. So that's, to me, that's kind of fun. I've never had a chance to do that in my career where like I was like, yeah, let's take more pictures. I've never wanted to take more pictures. We had an opportunity this past week with the NWA to do just that. And I was pumped for it, man. I was excited because it's never been like that for me. And I worked really hard to get there. And it's like just a little bit of enjoying that success. Like I said, it looks different now than in how we thought it would be. And feeling happy about something like that, that's feeling successful to us, or to me at least.
What was it like for you growing up near sort of a local mecca for pro wrestling in Poughkeepsie and then becoming part of such a part of the fabric of wrestling in the same community?
It's like a fairy tale in my brain when I feel into my history of pro wrestling just in this area and with my dad. We got some great experiences here in Poughkeepsie together. I remember the first time my dad ever took me to wrestling at the Mid-Hudson Civic Center. There was a, what is now the Millhouse Brewing Company. It's right on the main strip in Poughkeepsie, but it used to be a Chinese restaurant. And back in the late 80s, I guess, was when this would have been. And my dad took me there so we could see some of the wrestlers that were in there. And I remember Andre the Giant in the bar area in this specific, taking up like this whole corner, and he had all these people around him. And that was my very first like experience meeting wrestlers like up close and personal. And that kind of is the first experience with many others where my dad would take me to the Civic Center. He wouldn't take me to everyone. I remember when always waiting to go around that ride, the back of the Mid-Hudson Civic Center, to see if it would say that WWF was coming, because they would put it on the marquee. And I knew that if it was up there, there was a chance my dad might buy tickets. But we were on a couple Monday Night Raws. Like there's one, my dad got us right across from the hard camera shot in the Civic Center. We're on the whole Raw. My dad's wearing a tie-dye shirt. And it was when Sherry attacked Luna on Monday Night Raw. It was awesome. In that building was some really cool things. And we went to pro wrestling together as little kids. And then when ECW used to come, Hale was there all the time. And I only went to like three or four of them. My parents like forbid me from to go to ECW. So I had to sneak my way into them, like tell them I was going to do something else and then end up there. Hale wasn't like that. He sat front row in like a bright blue Superman shirt. And then we graduated high school in the Mid-Hudson Civic Center. And then with Northeast Wrestling, we had a chance to bring independent wrestling into Poughkeepsie again at the Civic Center. And, you know, Northeast Wrestling had a chance to sell out that building for the first time in a very long time for something that wasn't the WWE. And subsequently, we had some great shows there, and we had a feud, Hale and I, against each other. And then there was an opportunity to bring House of Hardcore to with Tommy Dreamer in the Mid-Hudson Civic Center. We had our wrestling school right there on the stage three nights a week. You know, and then it's kind of surreal just to think and feel into that building and the things that we've done there in Poughkeepsie as a team. You don't, like you just said, to be entrenched in the fabric of pro wrestling in this area. And it's hard to think of it that way because you're the one that's in the middle of it, but it's really kind of cool to know that there's a little bit of that legacy for us that we left in that building, and all of the history and the stories that we've had together really are it's a time capsule for our, me and Hale's collective lives. It's a lot of monumental moments for us have happened in and around that building and in and around Poughkeepsie. So we'll always be the favorite sons from this town. And we had a chance to wrestle a guy like Tony DeVito, who's been on your show before, and he's from Poughkeepsie, and the Bell brothers, Mike Bell. And I remember growing up, those were the guys that were independent wrestlers from Poughkeepsie Mike Bell even went to Arlington High School, that came from where we came from and did what we wanted to do. And they were the examples of that for us and what we tried to be. So I had always known those guys as a kid, and then to meet them and grow up, growing up and have them be mentors for us through pro wrestling was also like super cool. And it's another generation of Poughkeepsie wrestling that kind of got passed to us, just through coming through the ranks, and the fact that we're still doing it is really cool.
And DeVito will correct us that he's actually from Newburgh once he listens to this. So I'll go back.
Nobody ever corrects themselves and says they're from Newburgh either. Just DeVito.
He did on our show. So I know back when I was kind of like, you know, just learning what this area's wrestling was like, you know, even things like, you know, gosh, the Rosati sisters are here. Like, what are they doing here? Oh, wait, they're actually from here.
They were. I actually met the Rosati sisters. My dad took me to WrestleMania 8 in Indianapolis, Indiana, and we were crossing the street, and my dad goes, "It's the Rosati sisters." And I had no idea what he was really talking about. And then when I saw them, I was like, "Oh, those were the Bobby Heenan chicks." And we ended up having knowing them, and I'd seen them around Poughkeepsie all the time growing, or as my career was going. And they're like a little Poughkeepsie gem that not too many people specifically know about or whatever. But I've had a lot of interaction with them, and it's cool.
Yeah, same. So you mentioned before about being trained in OVW. You were originally trained at World of Hurt with JB Black and Dave Danger, if I remember that all correct. Yep. What was the best thing you took out of the OVW experience?
Great question, Phil. The best thing I could take away from that was how to be a professional wrestler on television. Jim Cornette was very good with not like laying out the TV shows and explaining like what the terminology was that they used for writing a TV show, where the segments fit in, how to hit your time when you're wrestling, how to come up from commercial breaks and be in action for how they like it on the big leagues, putting together entrances when you're a team, or making sure your gear was professional. All of those things were what I took away from OVW, because I was with the guys that were literally going to the show from practice. Like, they'd be there with practice on Friday and they were on Raw on Monday. So it was a great opportunity to know like how to conduct myself if I wanted to be at that level and see that success. And it was a time at OVW where there were some great tag teams. M&M started there. The Tolans were there. We had, the Heartthrobs, and they had this feud through that time. And before that, there was Bane and Seven. There was Magnus and Jindrak and O'Hare. There was the Bashams. Like, there was just, I mean, all these guys that were awesome at tag team wrestling and showing everyone how to do tag wrestling and the singles wrestling. There was Nick Dinsmore and Rob Conway and Doug Basham on his own, and Johnny Jeter, I could go on, but the guys that are, there's still a lot of those guys that were wrestling at OVW when I was there that are in the NWA right now. And I was just sitting in that locker room the other day, we're looking around at each other and like, holy cow, it's Aaron Stevens, Elijah Burke, Chris Masters, myself, Mickey James. I'm sure I'm forgetting a few, but that's 2003 OVW. Like, we were all on television doing all this stuff right there. It's like, when I wrestled CM Punk, Mickey James was his valet. Like, we all had this like weird crossover and stuff. And I guess that would, if I could say I could take away two things, it would be those relationships that I formed there, because they've really been career long friendships and professional relationships that have withstood that time.
You're definitely also the only person I think I personally know whose college internship supervisor was Jim Cornette. So, yes. How close is he in real life to what you see on, you know, the kind of the persona that he presents?
It's hard to separate those two, I would say, as what the real version and what the version you hear on the podcast is. You know, I'm not going to say that it's like turned up a lot, because Jim can be him, and unabashedly, I feel. And he is a person who literally felt that he had a certain way that pro wrestling should be done and wanted you to do it that way when you were in his house. And that's how my relationship with him at OVW was, and that he had no problem getting in there and showing you how to do it. And he also had no problem telling you that you were wrong doing what you were doing. And he was the first person in my life that I ever saw spontaneously break out in nosebleeds from being like legitimately just like so angry at something that he had seen. He'd come through that door in the back and it's just a nosebleed. Like, wow, man, like that's mad.
Wow.
Someone who's passionate about this product and or about pro wrestling and how people take that sometimes is like how you receive is something you need to look at also. And letting someone just put their personality out there and throw their thoughts and feelings out there, that's, they're responsible for that. And how you receive it, you're responsible for that too. And I can't be offended by somebody else's thoughts and feelings and opinions. It's just their thoughts and feelings and opinions. And it gives me perspective and it gives me a chance to kind of look at things another way. But, you know, everybody has to own their own stuff. And he does that very well.
All right, so we're going to move on to something we call the three count now. It's three quick questions and your answers, and crafted specifically for Vic Delici. So hopefully this will be good. All right. So what is a wrestling theme song that you could easily sing at karaoke without even having to look at the words?
Real American. Instantly. I could sing I Am a Real American at karaoke. No need to look at the words, straight up Rick Derringer style. And I would air guitar the whole way.
I'm curious too, are there any wrestling promos that you would easily be able to recite similarly off the top of your head without needing to look at what they said?
The Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, from WrestleMania 6, Jake the Snake Roberts, when he does the wallowing in the muck of Everest promo. I actually used it, I wanted to use it as one of my monologues for theater class in college. It's just such a great promo. It's from WrestleMania 6, if anybody hasn't seen it yet, it's probably considered my favorite and best promo in wrestling, because he doesn't raise his voice. The way that he looks through the camera and delivers the lines about Ted DiBiase making people grovel for his money, and then what he was going to do when he got his chance to make Ted DiBiase grovel for that money himself. It is a fantastic promo.
I was interested a couple of weeks ago on NXT. I don't know if you saw it, but Joe Gacy actually used a piece of the Steamboat WrestleMania 3 promo in a promo he cut on NXT that I'm not sure anybody caught.
No.
But he was doing the minutes, the seconds. This is our moment. And I was like, wait a minute. I've heard that before. What are you doing?
Dude, that's awesome. Good stuff.
But he did it in a way that was within his character. And, and so it was I gained some respect for him when I heard that too.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
What is your favorite match of all time personally? And what is your favorite match of all time that Vic Delicious was in?
Wow, some great question. My favorite match that I guess I have to go with the match that I've watched the most and can watch the most. In a singles match, it would be Hogan and Warrior from WrestleMania 6. It's a match I've watched the most. I could also say that I've watched the 92 Royal Rumble just as many times, if that counts as a match that you could watch over and over again. And a match that I've participated in that's been my favorite, I will say the match where Hale and I won the tag team titles from the Battle Brothers in a steel cage in Newburgh, was one of those moments when like we actually like when he put those belts in my hand, it actually meant something to me in a pretend phony world of pro wrestling. It was a very real moment because I worked really, really hard for that.
So. And I was in the front row for that show, and that was a terrific match. So you have one of the most unique names that most people have heard in wrestling in Vic Delicious. And I was kind of wondering what else would have been on the cutting room floor if you couldn't be Vic Delicious or Rob Begley, what your name would be.
My goodness.
That's a WWE thing now. If you can't be your indie name or your name,
yeah,
something.
man, it would see, like, when I decided on Vic Delicious, it was, I wanted a name that was part ladies man, part butt, like, ass kicker, if I could say that. And I thought Vicious, there was a tag team, Vicious and Delicious, with Buff Bagwell and Scott Norton. And I changed Vicious to Vic. We got, boom, Vic Delicious. I was like, that's awesome. So, like, what would I go with right now that would be something that would be a name? I guess it would, focused. If theory can be theory, then I can be focused. I'm going with it.
Hey, you heard it here first.
Yeah. If I could, if theory can be theory, then I can be focused.
Very good. Yeah. Well, Vic, it is so great to talk to you, and so great to see how well you're doing. And I've been wanting to do this show for a while. One of the real goals of this show was to get some interesting conversations with some interesting people with a story to tell. So I'm really glad that you were willing to tell yours here with us today.
I can't say thank you enough for giving me this forum to actually talk to your audience and tell my story. And I am an open book. So if anybody would like to reach out to me, my Twitter handle is right there. You can reach out to me on Instagram or Twitter, and any questions, or if I can help with anything or guide you, or if you have any questions about our career, anything like that, please don't be afraid to reach out. I love talking to people. So thank you so much for giving me this forum. It means a lot. I can't say any more good things about you, and I wish you the best of luck with this. Phil, you are a credit to your craft. You do a tremendous job. Thank you very, very much for this.
Thanks again, everyone, for joining us this week on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. I'd like to thank the man himself, Vic Delicious, Mr. Rob Begley, for joining us this week. Always great catching up with him no matter what. Join us next week, where our guest will be from one of the most famous families in pro wrestling history, the Crockett family, one of the voices of pro wrestling on the Superstation, and someone who is going to be heavily involved in Ric Flair's last match, David Crockett. You're not going to want to miss that one. Have a great week, everyone.